Good morning. Hope you're having a good, meaningful Yom Kippur, Day of Atonement. Our brief message this morning I've entitled, Just Who Is This? We're going to be looking at Isaiah chapter 40. For me, this is Yom Kippur number 34 since becoming a disciple of Yeshua. By the way, I'll be giving you the page number in a few minutes if you don't want to have to turn right now. It's number 34 for me since I became a believer in Yeshua. And the good news is I think I'm beginning to get it. Or not. After all, it seems we go about our daily affairs largely oblivious to the invisible but real cosmic war that's taking place all around us. We have little idea just how powerful these heavenly beings are and just who God is. It occurred to me the other day that we're kind of like the guy in the Old West who's driving a horse-drawn wagon, and he's driving along, either pleasantly drunk or else half asleep at the reins, not paying a whole lot of attention, unconcerned about the ruts and the rocks and the bumps he's hitting because he's unaware that he's hauling bottles of nitroglycerin. We scarcely know who it is we're dealing with. If we're going to take Yom Kippur seriously, if we're going to do more than just go through the religious motions, we need to think this through. Before we go on to continue and confess our sins, let's stop and honestly consider the nature of the one that we have offended. To do that, I'd like us to consider the words of the Jewish prophet Isaiah. Isaiah chapter 40, beginning at verse 21, that's the bottom of page 539 in your pew Bibles. Isaiah chapter 40, beginning at verse 21. Do you not know? Have you not heard? Has it not been declared to you from the beginning? Have you not understood from the foundations of the earth? It is He who sits above the circle of the earth, and its inhabitants are like grasshoppers, who stretches out the heavens like a curtain and spreads them out like a tent to dwell in. Let's pause there. He is the creator of matter itself. Everything that exists except for Him had a beginning point. And that beginning point was when He spoke the physical universe into existence. And He is enthroned as king over it. You know, there was no Hebrew word for sphere like we have. But the prophet apparently communicated over 2,700 years ago things that it took scientists considerably longer to discover, namely that the earth is not flat, it is round. And that the universe is in fact expanding. Let's come back to our text. He it is who reduces rulers to nothing, who makes the judges of the earth meaningless. Scarcely have they been planted. Scarcely have they been sown. Scarcely has their stock taken root in the earth, but He merely blows on them and they wither, and the storm carries them away like stubble. The infinitely wise and powerful God, after creating the earth and everything in it, did not go off on a 6,000-year vacation and simply let things take their course. He may be incomprehensible, but He is not distant. He has been at work in human history. And so do not confuse His patience, the fact that God allows, for a season, wickedness to continue. Do not confuse that with indifference. If you think Adonai ought to immediately and completely destroy every evil person, well, you and I will be among them. While He will never violate man's freedom to make choices, even when those choices are frequently foolish and sinful, even evil. The fact is, he cares about what happens, and he often intervenes, sometimes covertly via human agency, sometimes mysteriously, and we simply don't know how it all comes down, and sometimes manifestly, pouring out judgment by his own hand. Well, we can take comfort. We can take comfort despite the wicked rulers that have been on the earth, and including today. We can take comfort knowing that he will reduce them to nothing at the appropriate time. We continue in Isaiah. To whom then will you liken me that I would be his equal, says the Holy One? He's incomparable. Lift up your eyes on high and see who has created these stars, the one who leads forth their host by number. He calls them all by name. Because of the greatness of his might and the strength of his power, not one of them is missing. The God to whom we are addressing our prayers is incomparable. There is simply no one like him. In the entire universe, there are only two categories of being. There is everything that has been created, and then there is the uncreated one who created it. He tells us to look up in the night sky. There are approximately 100 billion galaxies in the observable universe, spread across vast light years. And though we might only see a few thousand stars with the unaided eye, the latest estimates suggest that there are 300 sextillion stars in the universe. That's 3 with 21 zeros after it. And it's my contention that every one of them is on display for his glory and for our sake. With the aid of telescopes, much of it is visible to us. And that's courtesy of God having located our sun and our solar system precisely along a lower rim and outer edge of a spiral arm of the Milky Way. Literally, perfectly situated to look out beyond our galaxy. He created us with a thirst to discover. And astronomically speaking, he set us up to do just that. And so he tells us, look up. He created every one of those stars and has a name for every one of them and never ran out of ideas for names for them. Who is this God we speak of? Let's continue in Isaiah 40. Why do you say, O Jacob, and assert, O Israel, my way is hidden from the Lord, and the justice due me escapes the notice of my God? Do you not know? Have you not heard? The everlasting God, the Lord, the creator of the ends of the earth, does not become weary or tired. His understanding is unfathomable. And so if 300 sextillion stars sounds like a lot to keep track of, consider this. And this blew my mind when I found this out. There are approximately the same number of H2O molecules in just 10 drops of water as there are stars in the universe. Let me repeat that. If you were to take 10 drops of water and could count the number of H2O molecules in those 10 drops, you would get a number equal to all the stars in the known universe. So imagine how many H2O molecules there are in the sum of all of Earth's oceans. You can't. You wouldn't have a clue. But the Creator could give you that number. Could also give you the number of hairs on our collective heads. and the full number of sparrows that have ever fallen to the ground? What makes you think he doesn't see and know every last detail about you? The God we are talking about knows every word you have said or ever will say, every action you have taken or ever will take, even every thought that has passed through your mind. He knows. Imagine the sum total of it. And now multiply it by the approximately 108 billion people who have ever lived or are living on this planet, and it is a drop in the bucket compared to the omniscience of Adonai. And try this on for size. God not only knows completely the past, present, and future, he knows every contingent past and future. What do I mean? He could tell you exactly what would have happened if you had taken a right turn instead of a left on such and such a road 3 weeks ago Thursday. Where you would be and what you would be doing and with whom you would be doing it if you had gone to this school rather than that school, majored in this field rather than that field, said no to such and such an offer instead of yes. He could tell you the sequence of events, not only in your life, but in what might have been your life. He knows the future, and he knows every contingent future. The psalmist rightly declared, "Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is too high. I cannot attain to it." And the one who knows you is the supreme judge. The writer of the letter to the Messianic Jews, the book of Hebrews, would have us remember, nothing in all creation is hidden from God's sight. Everything is uncovered and laid bare before the eyes of him to whom we must give account. The one who knows everything about you is the one before whom you will stand on the appointed day. And he doesn't grade on a curve. In case you were thinking of comparing yourself to thugs, thieves, or terrorists. So in view of such holiness, such power, such omniscience, what hope is there for sinful, weak, and ignorant human beings like us when we appear in that heavenly court? Do not think for 1 minute you can appear before El Shaddai, the Almighty, on the basis of your own moral character or goodness, an attempt to represent yourself. In the words of Abraham Lincoln, he who represents himself has a fool for a client. If that is true in earthly courtrooms, how much more so in the heavenly court? No, my friend, you need representation. You need a good Jewish lawyer, an advocate, and one of the highest order. And by the way, I can refer you to him. Proverbs 30, verse 4 says, "Who has ascended into heaven and descended? Who has gathered the wind in his fists? Who has wrapped the waters in his garment? Who has established all the ends of the earth? What is his name? Or his son's name? Surely you know." The question we asked at the beginning, just who is this, is a question that has been asked from time immemorial and has been answered unambiguously. This proverb speaks of one who has authority over the very elements because he himself created them. He has access to both earth and heaven at will, and the winds and the waves must respond to his word. And even the answer to who it is that can represent us is hinted at here. But since we need more than hints, I'll just tell you, or rather I'll let Mark, the gospel writer, tell you. And here I want to invite you to turn to page 747 in your pew Bibles, Mark chapter 4, verses 35 to 41. And while you're turning to Mark chapter 4, let me set the scenario. Yeshua has been performing miracles in the Galilee, and people are following him in huge crowds. At one point, he leaves with his disciples to go over to the other side of the Sea of Galilee. And we pick up at Mark chapter 4, verse 35, and here's what we read. On that day, when evening came, he said to them, "Let us go over to the other side." Leaving the crowd, they took him along with them in the boat, just as he was, and other boats were with him. And there arose a fierce gale of wind, and the waves were breaking over the boat so much that the boat was already filling up. Yeshua himself was in the stern, asleep on the cushion. And they woke him and said to him, "Teacher, do you not care that we're perishing?" Now that had to be some kind of storm. I mean, think about it. These are seasoned fishermen. They've spent years on the Galilee. They've been in plenty of storms. This had to be awfully fierce for them to be frightened for their very lives. And yet here is Yeshua, fast asleep. Does that sound familiar? A Jewish prophet asleep in a boat in the midst of a fierce storm. Ah, but unlike Jonah, Yeshua was not weary on account of running away from God. He was weary because day after day, hour after hour, he was teaching and healing and doing the will of God. And in his genuine humanity, he was exhausted. But the disciples were wide awake and terrified at the ferocity of this storm. So they woke him up saying, "Teacher, do you not care that we're perishing?" And Mark continues. And he got up and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, "Hush, be still." And the wind died down and it became perfectly calm. And he said to them, "Why are you afraid? Do you still have no faith?" They became very much afraid and said to one another, "Who then is this, that even the wind and the sea obey him?" If they had been afraid in the midst of that deadly storm, now they were really afraid. Just who is this in the boat with us who has this kind of authority? It was only beginning to dawn on them that they were in the presence of God himself who had taken on humanity. And that's who Yeshua is. And if you will confess your sin and transfer your loyalties to him, he will be your advocate with the Father. And his righteousness will be credited to you. That's who he is. He is the only one who can do this for you. But he is also all you will ever need.